And Toni Preckwinkel has just stepped into the studio, and she is the president of the Cook County Board. That's a thankless job if I've ever heard of one.
It's a difficult one for sure. Let's just be honest.
I don't know why you want that job, but you got it, and it's yours, and it's so I offer you congratulations and condolences simultaneously.
Well, thank you, Ro. Thank you, Anna.
You're welcome. Let's talk first of all. All right, so you see that CPA. Let me just sort of. I know this is not directly a county issue, but I've. Your thoughts on this as a civic leader. CPS laying off 200 people, you know, just now they're just announcing this. Do you see a way out of this mess for the Chicago Public Schools and the state budget and all that? I mean, is there anything that makes any kind of, you know, sense here? Is there a roadmap in your head as to what you would do in a situation like this?
Well, the first thing I should say is that my grandchildren attend public schools, so I have an interest in this as an elected official and as a grandparent. It's very discouraging, the kind of place we find ourselves both in the state and the city. I'm hopeful that all of the actors involved will put the hundreds of thousands of kids in our public school first rather than their political agendas, and we'll work our way through this.
It's interesting because we do have, and you know, we've seen all kinds of political kabuki, for lack of a better term, that's been happening here at the state level and at the city level and all of that. And I just wonder, you know, at some point does, you know, in these rooms, I just speak generally to this, in these rooms, I mean, when does the rubber actually hit the road, or does it ever? Or can people hold out for as long as they want in a situation like this? I don't think the state can it?
Well, talking about the public schools, my understanding is that there's not enough money to get through the rest of the year. So right. I think that we'll come to a crisis there. At the state level, I think it's possible to limp along. There's just terrible costs to be borne along the way. I was at the Martin Luther King breakfast on Monday, and one of the things I learned from the new president of Chicago State is they have about 6 weeks of funds left, after which they won't have the resources to pay their staff. And it's not just Chicago State. Eastern, I know, is in similar difficult circumstances, Northeastern. So not only do we have a situation where folks who have autistic children are not able to get services for them, and seniors who need in-home delivery of health care services don't get it, our institutions of higher education are not going to be able to continue to function. And I would think that those kinds of damning circumstances would prompt people to act, but we'll see.
From a county perspective, I mean, the county of Cook, people don't realize this. When they think about the county budget, the billions of dollars that the county raises and spends a year, obviously the criminal justice system, we're going to get to that in just a little bit. You know, you got to run the sheriff's office, you got to run the jails, you got to run the Cook County State Attorney's Office, all the rest of that stuff, and sheriff's office, I should say. Then you've got health care.
Right.
Gigantic piece, Stroger and the other satellite hospitals around the area. How much is the state budget situation impacting health care for you at the county level?
Well, actually, they've caught up pretty much for what they owe us for our health care provision of services. We have a Medicaid expansion program called County Care, and that's really the direction in which our health care services are going.
Federal money.
It's federal money, and basically they have been getting it to us. I should say, though, that at the end, our fiscal year ended November 30th. The state owed us $70 million at that point, $70 million. And we anticipate that over the course of the year, if we don't get the $282 million in grant funds and other funds that the state has committed to us, we're going to have to look hard at the programs that were funded by those dollars to see if we can continue to do it.
And that's state only, $282 million. That's not federal. That's state only.
That's right. That's right. And let me just say, you know, they finally made a deal in December about motor fuel tax money distribution because the cities, towns, and villages across the state didn't have the resources to pay for salt or for plowing the roads in the winter. And I don't know how the state, I don't know how they felt they could proceed and not provide that basic resource to people from the motor fuel taxes that were collected on behalf of those local units of government.
Speaking of taxes, Toni, talk about that, because I feel like people in the city and the county of Cook are all feeling tax weary, and a lot of new taxes are coming our way, both from the city, from the county, from the sales tax. Do you see there being relief for people at some point? Because I know you came into office hoping to be able to pull back some of those taxes. Circumstances dictated otherwise. But people are feeling the pinch now with real estate taxes going up and all the taxes seemingly on the rise.
Well, I think we're in a difficult circumstances brought on by decades of irresponsibility. You know, if you address your problems as you go along, you're in a better place decades later. If you deny, if you ignore, if you don't address those problems, then at some point there's a day of reckoning. And we've gotten to that day of reckoning, particularly around pension funds, but around other indebtedness. You know, in Cook County, for example, we have half the population of Los Angeles County. We have about 5.3 million, and Los Angeles is about 11 million. But our indebtedness, our legacy debt, you know, the bonds that were let years ago, that's twice as much as Los Angeles. So we have half the population and twice the debt. So decisions that were made decades ago.
In real dollars, half the debt in real dollars.
So decisions that were made, I think, unwisely decades ago, spending incredible amounts of money, are coming home to roost now. So we're having to pay the debt service, the principal and interest, on this accumulated debt that is substantially out of whack in relation to other parts of the country. We have tough issues to face, and as I said, I think it's a result of, unfortunately, decades of refusing to address critical issues, denying that these critical issues existed. However you want to look at it, but at some point somebody's got to address it, and I just decided we're not going to leave this. Bequeath this to our children, our grandchildren. We're going to try to address it now.
Where are places to cut? Obviously, you got the revenue side, but you got the spending side. There's got to, as you look at it right now, are there places you'd like to see?
We've made over $1.4 billion in cuts in the last 5 years. So we've worked very hard on that side of the equation, trying to figure out
about
how we
10%, roughly something like that.
That's about right. But let me just say, at some point, it's very difficult to cut without diminishing the services you provide, and people always want the services. But we just had a meeting this week with our labor union leaders, and we told them we were going to face another challenging year ahead. We're going to be meeting with our commissioners next week to talk about where we are, not only for the budget for this year, but for next year, to try to get people to help us figure out, you know, what kinds of things we can do to run government more efficiently and less expensively, because we need everybody on board to help us do that.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the state's attorney's office. Now, the state's attorney's race is interesting because your chief of staff, Kim Fox, just here a couple of days ago, she was slated by the central committee of the Democratic Party, which is that has one of those rings to it, right? That's a legacy ring. She's an impressive person. I guess the question really is, what would you like to see done differently here at the state's attorney level that is not being done?
Well, let me just speak to the fact that I'm very proud of Kim. She spent 2 years being my deputy chief of staff and chief of staff. She was the best chief of staff I've ever had. You know, from the very beginning, when I came into office in 2010, I made criminal justice reform one of my priorities. You know, we have two major responsibilities at the county, public health and public safety. And I knew that we had to change our operations in the criminal justice system. In this country, we have, for a very long time, been, I think, both foolish and cruel. We detain, prior to their trials, large numbers of people who are accused of nonviolent crimes. In our own jail, for example, when I walked in the door, we had 10,000 people in the jail. Only 7% were serving a sentence. You know, if we went out in the street and did a survey and people said, who's in the jail? You asked people, who's in the jail? They'd tell you people who have committed crimes, they've been found guilty, they're in the jail. No, that's not what happens in local jails. The people who are in our local jails, and Cook County is true as it is across the country, are people who, by and large, are not serving a sentence. Only 7% are serving a sentence. 93% are waiting trial. Right. So our jails are full of what we call pretrial detainees. They're in jail basically because they can't pay their bond. And of the people who are awaiting trial, 70% are accused of nonviolent crimes, and only 30% are accused of violent crimes.
So you like the idea of like expanding ankle monitors, things like that?
And releasing people on their own recognizance. I mean, really, if you're accused of shoplifting, do you have to be on an electronic monitoring? If you're accused of not paying your child support, do you need to be on electronic monitoring?
But if you're a repeat offender on those kinds of things, would you encourage them to be on
monitors? A repeat offender for not paying your child support? I think that most of the people who are accused of nonviolent crimes ought to be out in their own recognizance. That is, their promise that they'll appear for their hearings and for their trial. And actually, the jail population is now below 8,000, but we have the same percentage of people who don't show up for their trials, 2% or their hearings, and 2% who pick up a new charge. So a very modest number of people don't comply, mm-hmm. even when we have a lot fewer people in the jail.
Are you comfortable, since I know you have been so outspoken about criminal justice reform, do you feel we're heading in the right direction now, post Laquan McDonald shooting, the federal oversight, the new layers to oversee the police department, the changes that are being made? Are these the right choices? Is this going to get us where we need to go?
Well, it's unclear exactly what's going to happen here. And let me just say, the Laquan McDonald case is not an isolated incident. I wish I believed that it was. Mm-hmm. But if you look, there was subsequently, after Laquan McDonald, there was video released of, I think his name was Ronald Johnson, mm-hmm. The young man on King Drive who was, again, shot in the back by police officers, fleeing the police officers. They shot him in the back. There was Philip Coleman, a gentleman who was in jail, who was pulled out of his bed in the jail cell, tased on the floor, was taken to the hospital, was medicated, and apparently had an adverse reaction to the medication. And then the latest is about Cedric Chapman, who was a young man, part of a group of three young men who hijacked a car, apparently, again, shot in the back as he was fleeing. And the state's attorney charged his two accomplices to the hijacking with his murder, even though he was shot and killed by the police, on the grounds that they somehow contributed to his death by participating in the hijacking.
And, well, in a felony. I mean, that is in the law, right? I mean, that's a chargeable offense. So death, but if you're in the commission of a felony and someone dies, no matter how they die during the commission of the felony, I mean, that they can charge.
Don't you see a certain irony here that the young man in question, now he's accused of a property crime. He hijacked a car. He's shot in the back and killed. And his two
accomplices.
Thank you. I can't get the word out.
Accomplices.
Two accomplices. His two accomplices are charged with his murder. The police officers involved in the shooting are not charged with anything.
Interesting because your sheriff's police now are going to be out, you know, working with the Chicago Police Department on the streets, right? I mean, is that because that's been reported this week. Is that accurate that you're going to?
My understanding is that in some parts of the West Side that the sheriff has agreed to do that. The magnitude of the sheriff's police involvement remains to be determined.
And do you think, I mean, what will there be separate rules of engagement for Cook County sheriffs as there would be for the Chicago Police Department?
You know, I'm not sure. The sheriff is a separately elected official,
right.
And the sheriff's police report to him, and they have their own rules and regulations, and I frankly can't speak to that.
Could you weigh in on that? Is that appropriate to weigh in on that for you as the county board president?
Let me just say, you know, I said earlier, Roel, that I've lived in Chicago for 50 years, and I've always believed that the police could shoot and kill black and brown people with impunity, and there would be without consequence. And unfortunately, that is more often the case than not. And that's very troubling to me. And what happens when police officers do bad things, questionable things, unfortunately, there has not been a pattern and practice of holding them accountable for those bad acts. And, you know, lately what you've heard is that the officers are on the scene when Laquan McDonald was shot in the back by Officer Van Dyke. All of them were still on duty, although they all mm-hmm. apparently falsified their reports to conform to Jason Van Dyke's story. And the only reason we know that the facts are different is we see the video.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, without that video camera, the falsified reports of Officer Van Dyke and everybody else who was on the scene would carry the day, because after all, they're the police.
But they've been stripped since. They're off. They're not now.
Yeah, but only, it's like right the after. Last week.
right, exactly. So it's been a little
somebody,
bit of justice delayed here.
When somebody figured out that they were all still on duty, now we'll take them
off
the street.
Doesn't make sense, right?
So in terms of the Laquan McDonald thing, I mean, obviously you've got Mayor Emanuel, who's deeply under fire for it, the Chicago police superintendent, lost his job over it. Anita Alvarez is being,
She's going to run for her life right now in this race. Right?
But I suppose the question is, did the details of Laquan McDonald ever cross your desk prior to making the news?
Jamie Calvin, who has worked on the issue of police accountability for some time, asked me several months after the event. He told me that this was a difficult case, and he asked for a copy of the medical examiner's report. So I did an inquiry, and what I found is that there had been a request, I believe, by the state's attorney for an additional toxicology screen. So we normally do a relatively narrow screen for drugs in person's system, and what we were asked for was a much broader screen. So that screen went out, and as soon as that came back and the medical examiner's report was therefore complete, we shared it with the family at their request. The McDonald family. No, I didn't know there was a video. All I had been informed of was that this was a case that was pretty damning in terms of police conduct. And then I got the request for the medical examiner's report, which we provided as soon as it was complete.
All right. Well, it's you got a lot going on over there in that building. That's all I'm going to tell you.
I'll say. Yeah, man.
It must be very interesting. But you and the mayor use different entrances, right? Because like one side is the county building, the other side is the...
They didn't allow them to enter.
That's right. We use different entrances.
Yeah, they're different streets. It's like two different street addresses. Same building.
They take different routes, too, from what I understand.
I've never figured out how that whole thing works out.
No.
All right.
It's a beautiful public building.
It really is. Architecturally.
I get a little dizzy when I walk into it, though. I don't know. I think it's the arches. I'm not sure what happens. All right, Tony, thank you very much. Appreciate
Thanks, Tony.
It. Tony Preckwinkle, the president of the Cook County Board. And it'll be an interesting couple of months here as we head toward the election, too.
Thank you so much for inviting me.